So, any questions from anyone? Yes. Okay.
Thank you. My question is, do human beings all have advantage and weakness, shortcomings?
Yes.
And we are from Krishna.
Yes.
So Krishna has weakness, everything we have.
Yes.
But for Krishna, everything is beautiful and perfect.
Yes.
But for us, our shortcomings is not perfect.
Yes.
Sometimes make us
unhappy.
Unhappy, yeah.
Yes.
So.
Well, it's a very good question. I can see this is disconnected. So, it's actually at the heart of the matter is to understand the position of the absolute and the relative and the Supreme Lord, the infinite and the finite. We're told in Bhagavad Gita that this world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual reality. So just like in a reflection, see, everything that's in the original is appears in the reflection. But perverted reflection, the example given in the Gita, what Urdhva Mulamada Shakam. So it's like an upside down tree. Like when you look in, if there's a tree on the bank of a river and you look in the water, it will be upside down and backwards. So it's implying, you say, here we have shortcomings. So then we'll think, does that mean that the Absolute has some shortcomings? Otherwise, how do we have them? Or some kind of weakness. So from generally, we won't think like that. But when it comes to Krishna conception, we can conceive even that. Everything can be harmonized in Krishna conception. Even that, that who is omnipotent, all-powerful, has a weakness. What is that weakness? So, from the devotional point of view, we'll say that Krishna is known as Bhakta Vatsala. His weakness is his love and affection for his devotees. And that is greater, in this sense, than his omnipotence. So, for example, I keep seeing this thing prompting. We celebrate the pastime of Damodar, Krishna being bound by his mother. First of all, just the fact that he can accept the mother and be dependent upon her. That's the nature of devotion. Who is told to be independent. Right? In the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it says, Janmadyasya yatonbayad itaratascha arteshu abhignya swarat. Swarat means independent. And in this case, absolutely independent. The absolute cannot be dependent, contingent upon any others. Then they would be in the secondary position. That's the general statement. Later in the Bhagavatam, Krishna is saying, Ahang bhakta pradino yasvan tantra ivadvija. In the presence of devotion, even though I appear to be independent, it appears as if I've lost my independence and become dependent upon the devotee. So that is the beauty of devotion and the power of devotion, is that the infinite, who is omnipotent, comes under the control of the finite. How is that possible? Through love and affection. That's the meaning of devotion. When we made the first book for Srila Guru Maharaj, in the first chapter, there's a section that says, beauty is the ultimate controlling principle. Beauty, love, charm, and sweetness, not power or grandeur. That's a lower idea. So the king, and a stereotypical example is the person who's in the supremely powerful position. But the king may, through love and attachment, be under the control of the queen. Right? Or before becoming queen, some girl. Right? He's the king, everyone has to do what he said, but he's under the control of the beauty of some girl, of a young girl. So that principle Guru Maharaj is applying to Krishna conception, that generally we will attribute power, omniscience, omnipotence, omniscience, etc., to the infinite. But in Krishna conception, Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram is the highest aspect. Sundaram meaning beauty, and by extension, charm, love, affection, the very name Krishna, Krishibhu, Vachaka, Shabdo. And what is, when we say the word Krishna, what does it mean? It's attracting everyone to the center by his beauty, charm, and sweetness through love and affection, and nourishing everyone in response to that. So I think also of something that Guru Maharaj said with regard to Srila Saraswati Thakur, that's also indicative of a similar thing. We see him as the Jatiraj Ganai Parisevya Puram, the Jatiraj, the king of all the sannyasis. Whenever we see Srila Saraswati Thakur, he's so royal looking and commanding and looking very powerful and awesome, just totally awesome, awe-inspiring. But Guru Maharaj says that when he wrote the poetry in the Bhaktivinod Virahadasakam, which are prayers in separation from Bhaktivinod Thakur, he said, I saw that my Guru Maharaj, his one weakness was his love and affection for Bhaktivinoda Thakur, if we want to call that a weakness. He's saying his soft spot. That's the soft spot, is his love and affection for Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So Guru Maharaj thought, in a clever devotional strategy, if I praise Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then that's the way to capture Saraswati Thakur. I don't know why, but this keeps becoming disconnected. So I guess it's just going to have to be that way. But so he described it like that. His weakness was his love and affection for Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So if we want to use that word, but here we're taking it in a it's by tracing it to the central conception of the infinite, which is the Aprakrita Leela of Krishna, it shows itself as a beautiful quality. And there are repeatedly examples of this in Kurukshetra battle, where Krishna vowed not to interfere in the war. Right? So he would become Partha Sarathi, the charioteer of Arjuna. When it was clear that Arjuna was going to become, was going to be killed by Bhishma Dev, Krishna intervened. Because up to that point, what was it, Duryodhana, one night in the camp, he said to Bhishma Dev, I don't think you're fighting with full strength because you have so much attachment for Arjuna and the Pandavas. You're not, 100%. And they're all Kshatriyas. Like, that's the way to get to a Kshatriya. You're not fighting fully. So tomorrow I'll kill Arjuna. By the time the sun sets, he'll be dead. And he had these five arrows, and all the Pandavas, he had these five arrows ready to kill them. And that's when Krishna's also plays dirty tricks, and they're good. So knowing that, he told, who is it? You have some favor? Now's the time to go ask for your favor. And so he comes to ask for a favor, and they say, what do you want? That we'll just say you won. We won't even have to fight. We'll just say you won, you get the kingdom, everything. Is that what you want? Knowing they're Kshatriyas, they'll never agree to that. But he said, if you want, we'll just say, you won, it's all yours, it's over. He said, no, that's not what I'm asking for. Then what is it you want? I want those five arrows that Bhishma Dev had. And they immediately give them. And that's when Bhishma Dev said, Krishna, tomorrow Arjuna will die. Guaranteed. So that time comes, and Arjuna is in trouble. And the chariot's broken, they're dislodged. Bhishma Dev's getting ready to kill Arjuna for sure. And then Krishna, Krishna's weapon is the chakra. Right? Have you seen that? The wheel? This wheel-like weapon called chakra. So Krishna, he'd said he wouldn't take up arms in this fight, so he took the wheel off of the chariot. That's why when we go to Eka Chakra of Nityananda Prabhu, one of the legends is that's how it got its name. That's where that wheel landed. So Krishna picks up a chariot wheel, and he normally has his Sudarshan chakra, divine, but here he's taking this chariot wheel and he's approaching Bhishma Dev, and Bhishma Dev is shooting arrows at Krishna, and the arrows are hitting Krishna, and blood is coming. But it's saying, for Krishna, it was like flowers being offered from his devotees, hitting his body, like he's offering many flower garlands to Krishna. But like that. But they're flowers. And that is like a love bite. It's like a love bite to Krishna. And Bhishma Dev sees Krishna, he's so angry coming toward him that his dhoti falls off. Right? He loses his lower garment, and Bhishma Dev, later, when he's lying on his deathbed, he's offering prayers to this vision of Krishna. He's saying, how beautiful he looked, angry, running after me, ready to crush me. He was so beautiful. I want to see that image forever in my life. So all these things become harmonized in Krishna conception. All opposites. The arrows are becoming like flowers. The angry approach is seen as a beautiful figure. So, Kurma Avatar. He appears as a turtle. And remember, he's omnipotent, means he's all powerful, he can do anything. But in this pastime, in the ocean, the milk ocean, the gods and demons want to churn this ocean and extract immortality, nectar, amritam. But they're having some difficulty. So, Kurma, the tortoise, turtle, incarnation, appears. And what is his pastime? He can't scratch his back. Just like sometimes we have an itch on our back and you can't reach it. It's very... you need someone else's help. So, who is omnipotent? Here, what is the weakness he is showing? He can't... He's a turtle. How can he scratch his back? We'll say, no, but he's God himself. He, appearing as a turtle, of course he can... That's not his play. In his play, he's appearing as a turtle, has an itch on his back, and can't reach it. So, that always, it allows for seva, for service. So then, they put a mountain, because he's a rather large turtle, they put a mountain on his back, and wrap a giant serpent around it. And on one, you see this at the Suvarnabhumi airport, and after you clear immigration. One side, devas, gods, other side, asuras, demons. And they're using the serpent as a rope, and it's turning the mountain like this. It's itching his back. Just leave it, it's not going to work. It's itching his back, and as his back is being itched, the ocean of milk is being churned, and many beautiful things are coming. Lakshmi Devi, the moon, so many things. But while, just like people in this world, when their back is itched, they go, ah. So he's also going, ah. But as his breath goes, ah, the Vedas are being generated from his breathing. So just his breath is generating the revealed truth. So what does this tell us minimally? We have to reconceive everything. We can't, on the basis of our experience within this world, project that upon divinity, upon the infinite. And especially perceiving it as some sort of deficiency. Or flaw, weakness, disadvantage, as you say. So it will always be, or we should say that is the beauty of Krishna conception. Why it's supreme. Whereas in other pastimes, other avatars, incarnations, they're somewhat restricted in what can be accommodated in their pastimes. Sometimes, like Ramachandra as a king, he has to abide by Rajniti, the conduct and behavior that is appropriate to kings. But Krishna, there is no restriction. So he can contradict everything. Late, when Krishna is a little toddler, the gopis, the elder gopis of Vrindavan, sometimes they want to play with him. So they'll say, oh, Go pick that, bring that to me. They tell him to bring. And he goes to bring something. Sometimes he can bring it. But because he's playing, other times it's too heavy. He can't bring it. So he just touches it. And other times he's going, I'm so strong. Like a little child. That's the charm of Krishna. He's concealing his omnipotence. And so these, and showing some apparent weakness. So from the position of a child, he lifts Govardhan Hill as a 5-year-old boy on his left hand. The pinky of his left hand, he lifts Govardhan Hill. But what is his mother thinking? She's saying, oh, he's just a boy. How long can he hold it? But that is her divine madness. How can, if he's just a little boy, how could he hold it at all? How could, but she's thinking, you know, maybe for a little while he can hold it. But not, certainly not a day, a whole day. What to speak, 5 days, 6 days, 7 days. After some days go by, we hear that Rohini and Yashoda, they're pushing butter into Krishna's mouth, like to give him some strength. Because they think maybe he'll become weak and drop it. So we told before, Damodar, to Yashoda sees that Krishna repeatedly, he's getting into trouble. So she thinks, for his own benefit, I'll tie him. We see sometimes that people, they have these things now where they can harness the child.
Yeah.
Seen them at the airport. It's like walking your dog or something. See these little kids walking around, they have like a little... Because I saw this person in Dubai, they had like two kids. So she's thinking, oh, I'll tie him up, and then at least he'll be, you know, close, and that'll minimize the trouble. So she gets the rope together, tries to tie him, but we're told it's two fingers too short. So then she's thinking, all right, she gets some more rope, it's two fingers too short. She gets every rope they can find, and it's two fingers too short. But then, and so she's struggling. So Krishna sees she has flowers in her hair, the flowers are falling from her hair, sweat is coming from her brow. She's... And he sees how much love and affection she has for me. Then he agrees to be bound. So we're told, really, although ostensibly in the form of ropes, he's being bound by the ropes of the love and affection of his mother. So Bhakta Vatsala, he's a plaything in the hands of his devotees. So whatever we find in the absolute, or whatever we find here, if we trace its position back to the central conception of the absolute, Krishna conception, a Prakriti Lila of Krishna, we'll see that it's a beautiful thing, it's a wonderful thing. It's not a flaw or a deficiency. Our predicament is on the basis of magnitude. He's independent, we're independent, but we have minute independence, so we have a tendency to misuse that, to be overwhelmed by illusion, to make the wrong choice, to misperceive what is in our actual self-interest. Sometimes examples are given comparing jiva souls, the finite, to sun rays, and Krishna to the sun. So they're more or less qualitatively the same, but the difference is magnitude. Finite and the infinite. Any other question? Yes, yes.
Это чем?
Yes. Yes.
So people can value only something that they can get, like the trouble, right? It's difficult to get for them. But we, for example, have day after day we have Russian with you and your lectures and RT and everything. So, and we became used to it. So how can we remember about this importance and not to become
complacent?
Complacent, yeah, that not to be passive about this
thing. Yes. Well, Krishna consciousness has within it the word consciousness, meaning by implication, some awareness, some conscious endeavor. We can absent-mindedly do things or do things with remembrance. So, as you say, we prefer to not become complacent. But we'll have to factor in and accept that we have a tendency towards complacency. Just as we were saying before about finite magnitude and infinite magnitude. So our tendency is to degrade. It could take years, lifetimes, to go up, to become saintly, but you can become degraded in 15 minutes. It doesn't take a long time. So it's our tendency, because, as we said before, of our finite position, to come under the influence of bad association. So the solution is good association. In some places we'll find that this is equated to hunger. Sometimes we'll say, hunger is an indication of health. If you're not hungry, right, if even some nice food is put before you, you're not interested in it. It means you're in an unhealthy or disease condition. And we've had that experience. When you're sick and you can't eat anything, one of the signs that you're recovering is when your hunger returns. I go, I feel some genuine hunger now, so maybe this illness is finishing. So it's something similar to that. This hunger for to go deeper, to not stay on the surface and a superficial experience, but to go deeper. It's what we're told will take us even to the highest position. Famous sloka in Ramananda Sambhad, quoting perhaps Rupa Goswami, Krishna, Bhakti Rasa, Bhavitamati, Kriyatam Yadi, Kutopi Nalabhyate, Tat Pramolyam Mulam Ekalam Janma Kotri Sukritaya Nalabhyate. It says, you won't get this, the real substance of Krishna consciousness, by merely doing the right thing for 10 million births. But what will give it to you is hunger, genuine hankering for that. So hearing that, Guru Maharaj said, it requires this hunger. One devotee said to him, then how do we get that hunger? And Guru Maharaj said, associate with the hungry. Again, he's noted for his use of analogy. Maybe you're not feeling like eating something, but if you're around someone who's describing how nice Just like Srila Gurudev was that type of personality. Sometimes he'd start talking about prasadam. And even if we had just eaten recently, the description was so mouth-watering that we became hungry and we wanted to eat. And we just ate. But he had that ability in both ways. I mean, talking about prasadam and also in a spiritual sense. So these things, every day we have pat and kirtan. That means class and kirtan, but more specifically it means recitation. We recite certain things over and over again. And sometimes maybe we're doing that in an absent-minded way or not fully appreciating, comprehending. But Guru Maharaj recalls a statement from his childhood in the scriptures that said, Avritir sarva shastranam bodhadapi guriyasi. Said, it's not as important to understand the meaning as to go on hearing. Now normally, now I'm speaking as making an observation, that's not what we would expect to hear from Guru Maharaj. Normally we would expect him to say, the real thing is to extract meaning and not to mindlessly go on hearing. Like he had an aphorism, he said, again, an original creation of his, where he said, the repetition of sensation is not experience. I'll say that again. The repetition... Thank you. The repetition of sensation is not experience. So you see, so just to over and over and over again, but what this Vedic statement, Avritir Sarva Shastranam Bodhadapi Guriyasi, was saying, but still, go on hearing, keep hearing, and repeatedly. And there's a cumulative effect. Guru Maharaj said he realized this later in Gaudiya Math. There's a cumulative effect of all this hearing. So it may be very far in the future. We have our own personal experience. Some things I heard in 1971. And in 2011, I went, aha, that's what it means. So I'm happy about that. That's 40 years later to go, aha. Have an aha moment. Srila Gurudev himself was saying that sometimes very happily, like overwhelmed with feelings, saying, why are all these things being revealed to me now? And at the time, he was in his late 70s. But he's saying so much meaning came streaming out of these slokas and Harikatha, Krishna Katha, and he was just astonished. So sometimes Srila Guru Maharaj has also given the example, like I said, you know, the book, Shastra, in the form of a book, is a passive posing. It's actually spiritually conscious substance. Right? It's alive, more alive than we. And so, Chinmoy, spiritually conscious substance, but posing in the form of a book, maybe an old book, or a new book, maybe a digital book. Posing in some way. But not, he said, but so when we go to have the reading, the Vedic system is they take a garland and then they offer a garland to the book, and who's leading that class is offering themselves as an instrument of revelation, because Guru Maharaj is saying those scriptures, they want to reveal themselves. Like the 87th chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Veda Stuti, is rendered Prabhupada called it, prayers of the personified Vedas. So these Vedas, they're also people. These Upanishads, 108 Upanishads, 108 individuals, they're that personified. That's why they're in one section. One Upanishad starts speaking, another Upanishad starts speaking. And Vishwanath Chakrabarti says, some of the deeper Upanishads were getting really anxious. Like they wanted to say something that they thought wasn't being covered properly. Because generally, they're indicating the direction. Shruti bir vimrigyam. But these confidential Upanishads, they have the confidential part. They're saying, I'd like to say something, please. Like to steer this conversation in a new direction. So we have to remind ourselves continuously of these things. That's part of the process also. Right? So we think about Tulsi Devi, you know, Giriraj Govardhan, the songs and the art. We don't understand everything. It's good for us to say those divine words and the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Narottam Thakur, Srila Guru Maharaj. But sometimes, if we're fortunate, it may come to us. Some little glimpse. Bhaktivinoda Thakur compares it to lightning. Like when it's all dark, especially on the Shyama moon. You know, this is just a footnote. This place is something called Siam. It comes from Shyama. That's what Siam, they pronounce things differently, that's all. So they were saying, Shyama means dark and black. So they're saying, sometimes they say the Thai people came from China, a certain part of China. Guangxi, something like that. Forgive me, I know it doesn't even sound like what I just said. But you know, well, how do you say it? Yunnan, but other people say this is like Guang. What's the X? Guangxi. That's it. Some people say from Yunnan. Some say from there. It's a, you know, it's a legend. But they were darker. So Xiaoma, their complexion was dark. Just an interesting tidbit. But the reason I'm saying that. Why did I say that? Because dark complexion? Huh?
Light?
Yes. What was I saying before?
About
the Upanishads?
About something. we can understand something.
Oh, right. Yeah, lightning. So there's a black sky, and then there's lightning. But you know, and for a moment, you know, when there's light, you can see everything. And your heart, and then it's gone. But for that moment, everything you see, it's like that. And so those moments, like the chatak, Rupa Goswami talks about the chatak bird. It's a bird who only drinks rainwater. Right? It's a mystical bird. Water is everywhere, but not. It only drinks rainwater. And sometimes there's thunder and light, and it may finish the existence of that bird, but they only drink rainwater. Rupa Goswami says, devotees are like that. They're not going here, not going there, not taking, you know, durasha, false shelter, anything. They just stay fixed, accept their fate, durdeva midrashami hajani nanaraga. This is my fortune, my luck, Krishna's kind. Sometimes Gurudev would say two things we know. We are fallen, and Krishna is merciful to the fallen. So, like those chatak birds waiting, then sometimes something's coming. That moment, coruscating glimpse of brilliant illumination. He says, oh. And that's enough to give impetus to the heart to adhere and be true, faithful, and persevere. But associate with the hungry, Guru Maharaj is saying, those who do have some genuine eagerness consistently will seek their association, because they will awaken that kind of eagerness within us. So, but again, so when we're reading the statements of the devotees in the scriptures, Prapanajivanamritam, Bhagavatam, Charitamritam, we'll see, we're hearing what devotees say, it may awaken something within us, some little appreciation. Even a dim reflection of their mood will illuminate the heart and give us some encouragement, inspiration to go on. But again, how much genuine is that hankering? So we'll say, well, it's very small in me. Then I associate with those. Maybe they have a little more, a little something more. We pray to our Guru Varga. They have a great eagerness, hunger. Like Guru Maharaj was saying once, that, you know, what will feed an ant is not food for an elephant. Like there's some ants in my room. They don't need a lot. You know, one grain of sugar is like, you know, they're having a party. So he said, what will feed an ant is not food for an elephant. So when Prabodhananda Saraswati says, Vanchitosmi, 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 na sankshaya, Vishwa Gora Rase Magnam Sparsho Pi Mamanabhavat, I've been cheated of this, there's no doubt. Mahaprabhu inundated, flooded the whole world with Krishna praying, and I wasn't touched by a drop. That's what he's saying. But Guru Maharaj said, oh, that's just telling us such an appetite Prabodhananda has. What's a flood for others is not a drop for him. That's no prema gandasti drapi mero. Radharani Mahaprabhu expressing this inverted way of expressing their position. We can understand they have the greatest hunger, the greatest necessity. Rasaraj Mahabhavduya Karup. The combination of rasa personified and the one Mahabhav who can extract. So Radharani, she's extracting nectar from Krishna and distributing to those who are assisting in her service. Radha Dasyam, our aspiration is under the guidance of Guru and Vaishnav, Guru Varga, Rupanuga line, to be connected to that divine plane of service. The mind has a tendency to distract us from our own good benefit, from what the sort of things we should be contemplating. So we know our tendency is not so great. In fact, it's small. So we have a limited amount of time for that type of meditation, if you will. And most of the time we try to engage ourselves in some kind of responsible service. That'll be helpful. And the end result of that seva will be greater mindfulness, a greater capacity to hear, speak, remember, will be the outcome of dedication. But that tendency is awakened, bhaktya sangyat jataya bhaktya, in association with those who are like that, who have that. They'll awaken it within us. Otherwise, for the higher devotees, Nitya Navana Vayamana, Krishna's pastime, they're newer, fresher. Krishna, he doesn't look as, he's inconceivably beautiful, but the next time he's seen, he looks more beautiful than what one remembered from the time before. Not less. And we're told, Krishna, he's beauty personified. And the Braja Gopis, when they look at Krishna, he's so beautiful, they become more beautiful. He looks at them, their smiling faces, their lotus eyes, and he sees how beautiful they are, he becomes more beautiful. They seeing that Krishna has become more beautiful, that makes them more beautiful. Krishna seeing they become more beautiful, it's a competition of beauty, charm, and sweetness. It's the opposite. Here, everything reaches a peak, and then it goes down. Beauty is but a flower, wrinkles will devour, brightness falls from the air, queens have died, both young and fair. That's not fair to you, that's poetry. 500 years old poetry. But you get the idea, I think.